Well, welcome to Faith and Family, and thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin. For more information about Concordia University, visit our website, kfuo.org, and look for their logo in our sponsors section. This week, we're talking about military families, and guess what? I'm not Andy Bates. This is Joni Harwell. I'm sitting in for Andy Bates, who is losing his voice due to some allergies that he has, and so he has asked me to sit in, and I am really honored to do this because I helped set up this interview with Pastor and now Chaplain Tristan Engel and with Chaplain Craig Mueller, who is the Director of Ministry to Armed Forces, who happens to sit right next to me here in the offices at the International Center. So we have a good relationship. We laugh a lot, and sometimes we hear each other's conversations, and sometimes somebody says something, we say, what? What are you talking about?
That's right.
Welcome, and thank you for coming this morning.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you know, the reason I have you to start with is you were in Chaplain Mueller's office, and I heard this wonderful radio voice, and I thought, you know, whenever I hear somebody with a radio voice, I have to see right away what they look like. And here was Chaplain Engel, and learned that you had been serving at a congregation here in the St. Louis area, sort of out in the suburbs, and now have decided to become a chaplain. Where were you serving?
I was serving in Trinity Park Hills. It's about an hour south of St. Louis.
Okay, so beyond the suburbs, I should say. Okay, and this is a big decision for you. How long had you been at this congregation?
I was there, as they were often to tell me, just under 3 years.
Okay.
They wanted to keep me longer. The decision came about, honestly, for about 12 years now. I started thinking about the military when I was a sophomore in college. Mm-hmm. In fact, on my keychain here in my pocket, I'll pull it out later on, but you can see the same lanyard that the Navy gave as a recruiting tool 12 years ago that I've kept on my keychain for all this time. But with all that being said, I wasn't yet confident enough to pursue the military. I was thinking, you know, that's for more confident people. Those are for more qualified people. I was still trying to figure out me.
Mm-hmm.
And so about a year and a half ago, I started to notice a change in me. And this is where I have to give a big shout out to my congregation in Trinity Park Hills, because honestly, without them, I would not have been in this position to pursue this call,
mm-hmm.
Which sounds an odd way to talk about, especially in Lutheran circles. But what I noticed after my first year there was that they were such a loving and open congregation that it actually opened me up to be a little bit more adventurous,
okay,
to re-answer that question that we're always asking, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
What makes me me? What makes us as an organization us? What makes us human? And as I was going through and asking and answering that question, I stopped and had to look at myself and say, what is it that I'm interested in? Mm-hmm. And when I started looking at that, the Navy chaplaincy came up again and again, and it had popped its head up a few times throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
But this time I'm looking at it going, wow, I think I want to start knocking on this door. And one of the chaplains I had talked with said, listen, right now you have no call. You have nothing. That's not how we as Lutherans understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You're just pursuing an interest.
Mm-hmm.
And God does not give you interests, he didn't believe, without you wanting to maybe look at that,
mm-hmm,
and to pursue it. So right now you're just knocking on the door.
Mm-hmm.
If the door opens, then maybe you're supposed to go through. And once you get that call, that's when you have to make that decision. So it was about a year-long process working with Chaplain Mueller here and the Navy as I was praying about it, doing the paperwork, going through interviews, and eventually having that come to me where the Navy and the LCMS both said, we want you to pursue this ministry.
Okay, so Chaplain Mueller, what I'm hearing here is when you decide to be a chaplain, it just doesn't happen overnight?
No, it doesn't. You know, especially even for our requirements, you know, as Missouri Synod, we require 2 years a minimum of parish pastors to serve in a parish because we want good pastors. And, and what Pastor Chaplain Engel now has shared with you is exactly what we're looking for, you know, where the congregation also is part of that. As they form their pastor, it's always a growing process. And it's part of their mission, too. They're sending a pastor out into a mission field that many people will never be able to do, and he's going to talk to 18 to 24-year-olds who will never darken the church door. And it's part of his ministry that he did in his first parish there that they helped form him for that, of course, with God's help and in getting him there. So, yeah, it's a long process, and it's tough. He's going to have to move a lot, and he's going to have a great experience, see the world.
Now, Pastor Engel, do we call you chaplain right now, or pastor?
I think you can call me Tristan.
That's really hard for me to call pastors by their first name. I'm going to stay with pastor.
Whatever you're comfortable with. Let's leave it at that.
Okay. Will you go through the same military training as a person who's in the military? How do I say that? As a man or a woman who's in the military, do you have to go through that same kind of training?
Yeah. So what you're trying to get on is there's two main distinctions. There's the enlisted and the officers.
Okay. There you go.
I will be going in as an officer, and I will be going through officer training. Now, in fact, I leave a week from tomorrow. The difference between, there's actually a couple different groups of officer training. The group I'm with are for professionals. So there'll be other clergy members there. There will be doctors, lawyers, nurses. These are people who have been out in the world, who have already gotten a degree or have been working in a professional sphere, and they don't need to be trained on what to do in their specialty. We go for 5 weeks, and during that time, we're learning the culture of the military, how to wear your uniform, the hierarchy, how it all works within there. And from there on, we go to different places. There's a little bit difference, at least as far as I know, with chaplains, is that once we complete that training, we have to go to chaplain school in South Carolina for roughly 7 weeks.
Okay.
And there you're with any denomination, any faith group that has been chosen to be a chaplain in the Navy. And you'll be learning there what it means to be a chaplain. How do you work this? And the way they talk is that it's the two sides of the collar. On one side of your collar, you have your rank insignia, which denotes everyone wearing that rank or higher or lower. We're all on the same side, meaning we're all here in the military. The other side is your faith designation. So for us as Christian, it would be a cross. And one of the key things they talk about is the two sides of the collar. You're working both of these. So one thing that they're always looking for are professional people. Can you faithfully navigate both sides of the collar? Which is why I'm very happy to be Lutheran, because as I heard that, I'm going, wow, that's our two kingdoms understanding.
That's what I was thinking, yes.
Absolutely. We're raised that way. We can do that, no problem.
Right, our two kingdom theology,
exactly.
You know. Exactly. Well, what is it? I know you talked a little bit of ever since you were, you know, sophomore in college, thinking about this, but still there's, I guess for me, and I know this is for enlisted people as well, but what is it that takes you from a safe and secure environment that puts you into the military that could send you into a very violent environment? What is it that draws you to say yes to this?
So the second component, for me at least, the first was my congregation. They helped me to grow. The second component was I started rereading a lot of Luther's works, especially his early works right as the Reformation was starting. Mm-hmm. And the one that hit me, in fact, I just read it again. It's one of my yearly books now, is on the freedom of the Christian and what that actually means. And he breaks it down very early on in his treatise to two main points. He says, first and foremost, a Christian is completely free. He has no Lord at all. He is subject to no one. Meaning, in our spiritual lives, we who were completely enraptured to sin. I mean, he even describes us as a harlot that Jesus himself married and gave us his righteousness. He says, as much as we were that dark person, Christ has actually made us into a light and completely free. We have nothing that can actually impinge upon our salvation, mm-hmm. whether it's in this world, whether it's Satan working through the forces of this world, whether it's Satan acting on us himself. You don't have to actually worry because it all comes back to faith. Mm-hmm. You're clinging to the cross all the way, and if those greatest enemies have already been defeated because we celebrate Easter every single Sunday, mm-hmm. then we actually have some freedom. And with that in mind, then, he also goes to a second point within that, which is, however, because of love, we are a dutiful servant of all. And I've talked with a friend of mine, and we've talked about this treatise from Luther, and he goes, I would even push a little bit farther that Luther doesn't just say we're a servant of all, but that it is inherent upon us that we become their slave, that we work for the for someone else. Mm-hmm. And that word love has always been one that's troubled me, not in a bad sense, mm-hmm. but I've never understood, what is love? Mm-hmm. How do we describe it? So from Vicarage on to this point, it's a question I keep asking over and over, and I've gone to malls before, mm-hmm. and just did mini surveys and stopped random people and said, can I ask you a quick question? What is love? Mm-hmm. And most people have a hard time giving a response. And I think that's because love is too big of a concept for us to actually understand. Mm-hmm. So the definition I'm running with that, again, why I'm getting into the military, is that love is a sacrificial action on the behalf of an other person, something outside of myself, someone outside of myself, and that it's actually incumbent upon me to work for someone else. Mm-hmm. And so the military, actually, if we have nothing to worry about, if Christ has already conquered and we're still looking forward to that final day, I may get hurt. I may die at some point. And yet, if it's in the service of others, then that's awesome.
Wow. That is awesome. Chaplain Miller, is this what we find with all of our chaplains?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it is another call to a vocation. And it's, as Pastor Engel said so well, is the two kingdom theology too. Mm-hmm. And really, when I talk to the chiefs of chaplains of all branches, they really are looking for pastors who are very grounded in their pastoral formation and understand those two collars that he so wonderfully mm-hmm. described, that you're walking those waters, maneuvering it, how to stay firm in your conscience and in your religious organization. The military does not want you to be a Baptist, Catholic. They want to be who you are. So mm-hmm. if that is your faith, that's great. Mm-hmm. But they expect him to be a Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod pastor, and then also a naval officer. And so that's what we do see of our goals. We have a great reputation with the Department of Defense because we do take it seriously in training our pastors to be strong in their faith, good practice, you know, understanding, and serving others. And it's just a beautiful way he described that self-sacrificial love, you know, as pastors do for all their people, mm-hmm. taking care of them. So that's one of the things we're looking for.
And I guess in many ways, I mean, your congregation just must be a wonderful congregation, because it just sounds like as you have ministered to them, they in some ways have ministered to you in this growth and process that you're going through. But now you probably came from, as most Missouri Synod congregations are, an older congregation, and now you're going out to serve 18 to 24-year-olds. I mean, how is this going to work?
Well, I think the technique does differ a little bit, or significantly, mm-hmm. But primarily what I found in working with, I guess if you want to label like the younger generation, that makes me sound so old, but working with younger people is you don't have to have all the answers. In fact, most younger people are not looking for you to give them the answers. What they're actually looking for is that you sit down with them and you talk about the concept, or you talk about theology, that you're willing to sit there and listen, even if it has nothing to do with faith or religion, if they're just hurting or struggling. One of the big things with the millennial generation is they want to know, do you care about me first? And then will you come and can we talk about these things? We may still leave disagreeing, but at least we have the relationship still there. So part of the Navy chaplaincy really gets at the root of this too, which is it's called deck plating. You get out and you're walking among the sailors, the Marines, if you're with a battalion or whomever, and you're just there with the men and women who are serving, getting to know them, so that there is that comfort. So when things do happen, or if there is an issue, they're able to come and approach you in the office behind closed doors where they can talk safely with mm-hmm. you. The biggest difference then, too, is that coming from a congregation, you're coming from a you're expecting a Christian setting.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone knows, oh, you have a spiritual problem, go to the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
With the chaplain, that's not necessarily the case. I mean, you're wanting them to, but mm-hmm. the context he's in is one in which people will probably have no church background, may not.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be from different faith groups, not even Christian. And so can you still care for these people in a respectful manner?
Mm-hmm. So I would imagine we're not looking at, you know, some people who are not in the faith obviously think your pastors are there to lay down the law. And yes, that is part of your job, to tell us what the law is, but the gospel message is always there. And so you're saying, as a chaplain in this environment that you're going to be in, there's going to be first building this friendship, our relationship. Then when they come to you, you have that opportunity to share that love of Christ. And in some case, it may be something that they're struggling with that you have to help them with over that and tell them what God's word says. But you first have built that relationship of caring with them. Is that what I'm hearing, Chaplain Mueller?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the beautiful things about the military, they even get it right, is they give the chaplains, regardless of your faith group, absolute confidentiality. So the commanders know that, and so do the sailors, airmen, Marines, Coast Guardsmen, and airmen, because that's the one place they can go about any issue, even if they're not religious. And then again, as it goes with the relationship, the opportunities do arise. In fact, I just visited a couple of our chaplains at Naval Station Great Lakes and talked to the commanders, who reiterated how important and grateful they were for the Missouri Synod to send chaplains, pastors who are so grounded that they can know right away, hey, take care of the sailor.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they don't have a faith or whatever, they know they're going to be treated with respect. At the same time, of course, the chaplain's going to use whatever opportunity and wisdom to share the gospel with them and mm-hmm. and help them through life. So it is critical. It really is all about relationships.
All about, yes. And are we searching for chaplains? Are we needing chaplains?
Absolutely. If I could clone Chaplain Engel here, I'd do it. We need, it's one of those two steps forward, one back. I know I get a bunch of great pastors interested, and then some of our chaplains who have been for a while retire.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of like constant going. So yes, if there's any a pastor who's interested in this kind of a ministry, Air Force, Army, or Navy, you know, please give our office a call at 1-800-248-1930 or lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Okay. All right, and we'll give you a chance to mention that again in a little bit. Chaplain Engel, take us through a little bit of the training that you're going to actually have, and maybe you can tell us where you're going to be located.
As to the training, I have no idea. It's going to be a surprise once I get out there.
That's the way they like it.
But right now, where my orders have me stationed after all the training is completed, I'm stationed at Pax River, Maryland. It's an hour and a half southeast of Washington, D.C.
Okay.
It's a testing facility for planes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you may get on a plane.
I'm guessing maybe not at this point.
What else can you tell us about the involvement that you feel or that you're looking forward to in where you're going to be serving?
Where I'm going to be serving, from what I've heard, the base is quite large.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's a great challenge, because my congregation was always more than enough work. Mm-hmm. And just because things come up, planning services weekly, and the duties here are going to be very similar, just on a grander scale,
mm-hmm.
Pretty much about 100 times bigger than my congregation. And so what I'm looking forward to is just getting out there, making connections, introducing myself to the commanders, to the enlisted, to whomever's there, and just starting that process, figuring it out on my own while asking for help. Because this is a completely foreign culture for me. Mm-hmm. And this really is a cross-cultural experience because the military culture is different than civilian world. I'm still thinking and acting like a civilian.
Sure.
But I'm looking forward to seeing the changes and trying to bring in a helpful spirit. But as Chaplain Mueller also said, the word of Christ in the midst mm-hmm. of hurting marriages, in the midst of accidental deaths, in the midst of hostile situations, also in the great times. I mean, that's the great privilege of being a pastor. You get to be with people in the best and worst circumstances. And honestly, not everyone gets to do that. Mm-hmm. Christians on a maybe smaller scale do in their own personal lives. But pastors get welcomed in, chaplains get welcomed in, sometimes without even a moment's hesitation. They may have never met you before, but they say, come in here, we need you.
Right.
And so with that beautiful gift and that beautiful opening, it's a great time to share it with people, mm-hmm. Whatever that word of hope needs to be at the time.
It kind of seems to me like if any position in our life we have where we have to just lay it on the line and say, God, you are totally in control, which we know we have to say anyway, but a lot of times we pull it back. It seems like in the military, it's one of those places where you are just laying it on the line and saying, God, I've got to trust you every minute. Is that true, Chaplain Mueller?
Oh, I believe so. Yes, absolutely. Because there are so many things that you can't control, and again, it's not to say that the parish pastors is the same thing 24/7.
Right.
But the difference is, I think, is that you do have the two kingdoms more so than ever. You literally do live with your people, even as a hospital chaplain, whatever your vocation is. You go home. There'll be times when he'll be living, you know, in tents with his Marines or on a ship with his sailors. You're living with your parishioners, mm-hmm. and they know you very well, and you know them very well. So it really is putting on the line. You've got to really realize that you're going to be an open book. Talk about the fishbowl. I mean, yeah. That is a fishbowl. and that's why it's important, again, why they want chaplains, you know, to be strong in their own personal discipline of their spiritual life and to be that mentor, but at the same time be on the decks and on the ground with them and doing whatever they do except for combat arms, I guess, is about the only thing that chaplains can't do, but do all the other things with them and be present with them.
And how can we, and our listeners, how can we support you?
First and foremost, keep us in your prayers. We don't know what we're walking into every single day. We don't know who's going to be calling us every single day. So definitely keep us in our prayers. The others might be more resources because military spending mm-hmm. don't always have the greatest budgets either for chaplains. And so sometimes our LCMS chaplains need resources that might be out there. Maybe a hymnal, maybe it's a prayer book, something mm-hmm. to keep it going on in the field. So
okay. And so we do that by sending donations?
Yes, through Minister of the Armed Forces online or call us or email us. And we definitely get the stuff right to the front lines, whether it's Lutheran Service Builder. We have some guys that want to use that, so we buy them subscriptions or we send them hymnals, catechisms, devotional books. You know, the sky's the limit of what we can offer our chaplains who are out there on the front lines to deliver to our service members in time of need. So anything to help, we'll make sure it gets to the front lines, to our chaplains, which interesting is enough to know that we're still out there. I think it's sometimes not in the news as much, mm-hmm. but you'll be surprised how many of our troops are still deployed and our chaplains go with them. So anything is grateful for.
Well, we are grateful to you, to the military, and especially to you, chaplains, who are serving to proclaim the gospel message. And once again, to contact you, Chaplain Mueller, how do we do that?
Email lcmschaps@lcms.org or give us a call at 1-800-248-1930 and ask for Ministry to the Armed Forces.
Okay. And thank you again, my guests, Pastor Tristan Engel and Chaplain Craig Mueller, and God's blessings.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Area University Mequon, Wisconsin overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
For decades, hundreds of millions of babies have been forcibly aborted and their mothers sterilized against their will in a brutal effort to control China's population. This has nothing to do with choice, so why has Planned Parenthood been silent all this time? It's because International Planned Parenthood's been a partner in this gruesome crime. It affiliated with the China Family Planning Police and is literally working with them to force abortion on women. This isn't just a thing of the past. Today, International Planned Parenthood is a main supporter of these Chinese population thugs. Its director general said the one-child policy was very conducive to China's development in various aspects, and a former Planned Parenthood official called the brutal program a start to curbing global population.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been. Worldwide KFUO salutes our day sponsors on this Friday, May 13th, 2016. Today's day sponsors are Mark and Lana Hawkinson. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to Worldwide KFUO in honor of their 38th wedding anniversary and in honor of Mark's father who served in the Navy. Once again, we say thank you to Mark and Lana Hawkinson of New Haven, Missouri, today's Worldwide KFUO Day Sponsors.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster?
Good morning and welcome back to Faith and Family. I am Joni Harwell and I am sitting in for Andy Bates, who is actually working the board, but he has lost his voice because he has some allergies. And so he has asked me to sit in and do the interviews today. And this is really fun for me. I used to do it a number of years ago, if you remember, with Diane Summers. And so I'm getting a chance to do a little interviewing and talking to people. And, you know, Faith and Family is such a wonderful program. It gives us an opportunity to learn about ministries that the LCMS is involved in, not only across the country, but across the world. But today, we're going to be speaking with Reverend Frank Raffato, pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Charleston, West Virginia, and executive director of Peace Officers Ministry. Good morning, Pastor Raffato.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're always glad to have you. And what's the weather like down in West Virginia today?
Well, right now, as I look out my window, it is sunshiny, but the radar is telling us we're going to get some rain.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Have you been hit with a lot of rain like we have here in the Midwest?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we have gotten quite a bit. My home lawn looks like the secret garden, so I'm praying for a little dry.
I understand. Well, you're here to tell us today about Peace Officers Ministries. Tell us, what is that?
Well, Peace Officer Ministries is a resource ministry for law enforcement chaplaincy. We are a resource in that we provide materials, such as we have a Peace Officer Ministries Tactical Edition Bible. We do training, as we'll talk about here, I'm sure, in a few moments, that we offer. Mm-hmm. And we also do response to critical incidents and provide counseling and prayer and just the needs that arise out of critical incidents, be they natural or man-made incidents.
So when you're talking about training, what kind of training is involved?
Well, it's interesting to hear the military chaplains you had just before.
Uh-huh.
Law enforcement chaplaincy is a little different in that, as you heard them tell you, hey, you've got to go through, if you're going to be a Navy chaplain, you go through the Navy's training program, you got to go through the officer, et cetera. Law enforcement is different in that you could have a sheriff in one county say, I love chaplains and I want them and I'm going to get them training. And the sheriff of the next county could go, I don't really I don't need that, or I don't want that, or no big deal. And so it's a little different, you know, it kind of depends on jurisdiction. So what we do is provide training that helps them to be missionaries to this unique culture that is law enforcement. So we want to give them good theology so that they can do mission work in that milieu to bring the gospel. We also give some very practical things along with it, such as training in emergency management certifications and critical incident stress management certifications. Those things that are going to be tools necessary to minister to this unique culture.
And are these men and I suppose women as well, are they, do they come to you and say, I'd like to have this training, I'd like to be a chaplain, or do they, are they people that you search out?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't mean to be obtuse by that, but yes, we do have some people who find us on the web and we make contact with and are like, hey, we're interested in this training. And others, we do sort of go out and look and offer it. So what happens is you have pastors and lay people who want to minister in some way to this culture. And different police departments, different sheriff's departments have some different requirements in terms of level, if you have to be a pastor or if you can be a lay person that's approved by your body, or that kind of thing. And so we help people to wade through that, give them basic certifications so that when they go to their sheriff or their police chief or the head of the chaplain program at their local department, they can say, hey, look, we've got these certifications. We've got training. I like to tell people I'm a retired police detective. And so usually when I introduce myself to another officer, I let them know, hey, I promise I'm not a wannabe, I'm a has-been. Because police officers can be a little, if they seem standoffish, they're sort of trained to be that way. They want to kind of know about you before they trust you. And so we kind of train the folks that are going to do chaplaincy and minister to peace officers. We kind of teach them about that and how to sort of get through the that trust barrier, if you will.
And what did, okay, you told us you were a detective. What led you to serve in this ministry?
Well, I had no, when I started my police career, if you would have said, oh, you're going to be a pastor in the LCMS, I would have been like, boy, what do you have in your pipe? I don't, you know. So it's God sort of working through daily life. For me, it was I was working in major crimes, so everything from homicides to child abuse. And I knew I wanted to very active with my family and church. And so I was thinking post-career, what am I going to do? And I got some training through the LCMS, and I ended up at seminary. And it just so happened, of course, in homicide, we used to say there are no coincidences. But it just so happens that there was the founder of Peace Officer Ministries at the seminary one of the summers I was there giving the first year of the training course. And he is also a former peace officer who became an LCMS pastor, and we hit it off. You would have thought we had worked police together, and it just sort of snowballed from there. And I took over as the executive director in 2010, and we just kind of try to keep the ball rolling on this.
Well, okay, everyone obviously in the world has heard about Ferguson, Missouri, and the incidents that happened here. How were chaplains able to serve in that situation?
Well, there's if I can step back from that just a little bit and say, you know, when I come to community events and I'm going to speak, or maybe to congregations who invite me to come help them to serve this particular community, I will ask the question, how many of you have called the police and said, hey, my spouse and I are getting along great, my kids are straight-A students, and they obey every word that we say, and we just want to share it with a few officers. Can you send a few over for tea? Nobody does that, right? You can kind of chuckle at that. I know certainly I never got that call. And so officers, whether they're at a Ferguson where there's a big conflagration out of an incident, or if they're in a large jurisdiction where they regularly see, you know, high number of homicides or other violent crimes, or whether they're in a very small jurisdiction where there's not a whole lot of that sort of big crime going on, they still can get worn down by what they do see, because we don't call the police when things are going well. We call them to help us when they aren't. And that can wear on them. And so the way chaplains can serve in those situations is to remind them, as Paul tells us in Romans, that you are God's servant for our good. You are a necessary good in the face of the evil that is real in this world. And so as God's instrument, you are our front line against that. Or as one officer put it, officers are often the barbed wire that separates the sheep from the wolves.
And so with peace officers ministry, then basically you're ministering to the officers themselves, not to the community that they're serving in?
Well, we will minister to anybody we get an opportunity to. But yes, our focus is for those who are in the law enforcement family,
okay,
if you will. So officers, civilian employees, the officers' families. For those involved in law enforcement, and having been in law enforcement, it really is a family. I've said often the church could sometimes learn, maybe if they watched how police officers rally around each other when they lose one of their own, kind of thing. It's really the kind of camaraderie I think we're called to.
And there is a high amount of stress, obviously, when you're protecting people and seeing the situations that you're in. Is there a high request for the chaplain to come and share with the police officers? Are they open to having you come and share? I know you said because of your detective background, you let people know up front who you are, but are they open to letting you come and share with them?
Some of that has to do with the culture of a particular police department. You know, if their officers are generally the kind of people who already want to be problem solvers, see themselves as strong. So if they're involved in something, they want to think they don't need help. And so we have to sort of educate and help them to see that it is not weakness to attend to your needs, especially your spiritual needs. And so as we do that and we gain trust, you have to build relationships within that as a chaplain. Guys have to see, once they see they can trust you, they do, officers do tend to share. And I will say my experience thus far, I have yet to have an officer when I ask him, hey, would it be all right if I pray for you? I've yet to have one say, oh, no, don't do that. You know, so it's, I think they appreciate once you have their trust, that kind of support.
And how do the chaplains get to build that relationship with the officers? Do they actually sometimes go out on patrols with them? How do they build this rapport with the officers?
Is one of the ways to build it. Most departments have a ride-along program of one sort or another, and if they have a chaplaincy division, they're often the department itself will say you have to do so many hours out in the field with officers. And then, of course, as part of our training, I also say if you have a larger department, like I was in a fairly large department, about 1,400 men, we had several divisions. And so you need to go out and sit in roll calls, go out and see who the detectives are, go to the SWAT guys and interact with them, because that's getting close to people, that's how you build relationship. And so, yes, that's how to do it. Just be a presence, being a presence. With them.
And there's like a continuous training. I know you have a upcoming training May 23rd through the 27th. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think, I know I'm a little biased, but I think it is world-class training that we have. I have several former law enforcement officers, several who are LCMS laymen who come in and we teach about the culture. I have we have one who's had an experience, for instance, having been involved in a shooting, walked in on a robbery and had to shoot the suspect, and can sort of relate what it was like to go through that. We also, this year, we're very excited. That same officer teaches now criminal justice courses at a college, and he is going to be bringing with him. We're going to have the students go through what is called a shoot, don't shoot scenario, and it's with lasers, and you kind of see a screen in front of you, and different scenarios come up, and you in a split second have to decide, is this does this warrant me using lethal force or not? And then you kind of debrief that. Why did you make the decision you made? What was it like to have to make that decision in a split second? The things like Ferguson that you brought up before, part of the problem is we do a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking.
Right.
You know, officer has a split second to make a decision, and we take weeks to talk about it, hash it over, and that kind of thing.
So it's kind of putting these chaplains right in the situation that a police officer might be in and making them realize this is really what it's like for a person out there.
Yes, and to help understand, and also part of the chaplain's job, you mentioned the community. We do sort of serve the community in a sense. Oftentimes we have an opportunity to be ambassadors for the police and help people to say, hey, it's a hard decision they make when they go to effect an arrest, or if force is necessary, how the continuum of force works, and to be able to help people to see that, and so maybe not be so quick to judge until all the facts come in.
Well, and like you said, building relationships. I know here in St. Louis, police officers are having a lot of times where they're going out and having coffees with the people in the communities. So they're meeting one-on-one to say, hey, we're partners in this. We're not against each other.
That's right. And further, the police are human beings. You know, mm-hmm. They're not, you know, you put the uniform on, and so I admit, when I was a rookie and I first put that uniform on, boy, you felt 10 feet tall and bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but deep down, you know, you're not. And officers know that. Mm-hmm. And they've got families, they've got kids, they've got things they care about. Many have faith, and they're trying to figure out how to live out their faith in Jesus while they're being police officers. And so, all the more reason for us to help, if I might put it this way, to humanize the badge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, who should attend this upcoming event that you're holding at Concordia Seminary, the training seminar?
Pastors, lay people, peace officers, anyone who wants to help this community, this unique culture of law enforcement, to support them, to bring the gospel to them. Officers know about the law, and if they're honest with themselves, they can look at it and go, well, I know I don't keep that. And so they're ripe to hear the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyone who has a desire to help in this endeavor and to learn about the culture, it's open to them.
And you may not necessarily be a chaplain, but you're also going to receive some good training that will help you, just as you said, out in the community.
That's right. And frankly, you know, if somebody is listening today and they're part of, say, the evangelism team of a church, and they're thinking, how do we reach out to officers? What might we be able to do? Boy, this would give great insight to how police, law enforcement people think and why they act. And so, much like you probably would not send me to a country with a different language and not teach me the language, mm-hmm. I don't want to send somebody out into the law enforcement culture without sort of helping them with the language as well.
So can you give us a little idea of what will be covered in the seminar?
Yes, we do things. We start actually with the seed of doctrine from God's Word, Romans 13. And so on that first day, we will explore what does it say about our role as Christians in interaction with the government, and in this case, you know, honing it down into those who are in law enforcement, and how that applies. So we want to start with God's Word. We also look at our sort of unique way we Lutherans sort of approach Scripture. So we're going to dive into what two kingdoms theology means, mm-hmm. and the distinction between law and gospel and how that's good. So I'll give you a for instance. My oldest one, fortunately for me, my oldest daughter does not remember this incident. But when she was about first grade, I remember coming home and disciplining her, getting a, I don't even remember what it was she did. But in the middle of doing it, I realized I had her hands on the wall, and I was yelling at her like she was a suspect. You know, what a horrible thing.
Right.
You know, and we kind of laugh about it now, but that's it's hard to turn that off.
Mm-hmm.
That's law. That's the law coming down hard. And so what we want to do is try to help chaplains or others who are going to minister to help officers see how to sort of, you know, treat your wife or your kids like they're suspects or talking to them in that way. It's probably not going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So on the other hand, to also let the officers know that, you know, the gospel doesn't mean that you go, and if you're responding to a bank robbery call, that when the bank robber comes out of the bank, that you run up to him and give him a hug and say, hey, do you know Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's how do you appropriately divide that? You know, and so that's sort of the basis, that foundational theology
mm-hmm.
that will get us into, well, then this sort of secular training and how to respond to a critical incident or shoot, don't shoot, and all that. How does that play? So now we're going to be able to have our theology speak to that.
That's wonderful, because I don't think that there's probably another job out there that's more stressful than like firefighters and police officers, anyone who's called to serve the community, because I think more than anybody, they do have to have that, where they have to have the law part, but then, you know, they have to be able to turn it off and like you said, almost be like another person to their family.
Or at least have that. This is why I love our distinction of law, gospel, and that kind of thing, if we can kind of look at it like that. There's
mm-hmm.
a time to apply one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can help people to see where and when to apply it appropriately, it just, it really is much better for the officer, for his family, for the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is the approach to instruction and learning in this seminar? I mean, do we divide up into different groups? Is this all as one group taught everything? How is this handled?
Well, we bring the group in, and depending on how many we have, I approach this with some adult learning techniques. We do sit people sort of at round tables, and we give some time for some interaction at the tables that they're at, so that, because we will have sometimes officers who do come to this training because maybe they want to start a chaplaincy program at their department or something, and they're able to give some insight into what they've dealt with and the things that they understand about law enforcement culture.
Okay.
And so we want to offer times for that interaction. And then we break out, depending on, we have two tracks for different certifications. Some people are looking for some basic certification through the federal government, through the Department of Homeland Security, to be able to respond to critical incidents and be qualified to be part of a critical incident team.
Mm-hmm.
And we offer that. In fact, the LCMS layman that I have coming to instruct that actually was one of the head security people for the Olympics when it was in Utah. So he knows about security.
Okay.
And he does that. And then our other one is critical incident stress management. You talked about stress that officers have.
Mm-hmm.
We have a certification that helps them to, how do you debrief somebody? How do you help somebody walk through a terrible incident, such as a Ferguson,
mm-hmm.
or walking into a Chinese carryout restaurant and seeing somebody trying to rob it and you have to engage them, or responding to a SIDS death, or, you know, any number of things that, you know, if I can put it this way, a civilian or a regular folk just don't see every day.
Right. Right. I think that's true. We often think of police officers as just coming into situations that are violent, and that's not necessarily true. They have to deal every day with helping people. It could be a car accident that somebody's been terribly injured in, or, as you said, a SIDS incident. There are different things that they have to deal with.
Yes. I even experienced, you know, you think you're the good guy. And I experienced this early in my career. Somebody got a call for somebody being shot at an apartment complex, and I was the first one on the scene, and I got out of the car, and everybody to a person was yelling at me, what are you doing here? We don't need you.
Oh, wow.
Of course, they wanted the ambulance.
Right, right.
And, you know, which I understand that, but at that time, I kind of looked at myself and said, well, I have my uniform on this. I'm one of the good guys. I'm here to help.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right,
and so that can wear at you. So even if you're not you know, seeing murder and mayhem every day, it's that stuff can also cause stress as mm-hmm. well.
Well, how do we find a registration information for this training event?
Well, I want to point you to our website, Peace Officer Ministries, and also the Concordia Seminary's websites for their continuing education. They both sort of point to the same area, and there's registration online. There's also a brochure that kind of lays out in a little more detail than I did what the sections of the course are.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we start from the Word, and our flagship resource, which is the Bible that we've put together with Study Helps for Officers in it as well.
And that's called the Peace Officers Bible?
Peace Officer Ministries, 5.0 Tactical Edition Bible.
Okay. And they can go to peaceofficerministries.org for information?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you again for joining us. And that seminar training, again, is May 23rd through the 27th. And they can still register up until what date?
They can register all the way up to the 15th, I think, is what we have said.
Uh-huh.
But if somebody through our website emails and they need to have a little more time to make a decision, we're a little flexible, and I can work with the seminary in that. So if they contact me in that way,
okay,
we'll work it out.
Well, thank you so much for the work you do with this, and blessings in your church and also in this training.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you for having me.
Sure. And thank you for being with us on Faith and Family. And Andy Bates will be back on Monday. I'm sure he'll have his voice by then. But I have certainly enjoyed being with you today. This is Joni Harwell. Have a blessed weekend.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.